Okay, let's take your phone calls now as we talk about chemtrails with Dane Wigington. We'll take your calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Dane, is there one region on this planet that seems to be immune to the possibility of the spraying and what the results might be?
That's a great question, George, and I would say the answer is patently no. In fact, as a testimony to that, about a year plus ago, 1,000 whales from the most remote places in the globe were tested for inorganics. This was a last-minute decision by this research team, and they were packed with aluminum. So I would say the answer is absolutely no. I've read stories even places like New Zealand where so much of this particulate matter is falling, the sheep are getting sick. So there seems to be nowhere you can hide. And people ask, how would the elites do this to themselves then? And I'll make mention of something we're going to do an article on soon when we find out more data. But there's a very high-tech blood cleansing method that we're just finding out about now, where the blood is literally pulled from the body and cleansed in a way that's not available to everybody. And we're finding about this from researchers from Europe, and this may be a factor in this equation. So we'll follow up on this at geoengineeringwatch.org at a later
date. Takes it out, pumps it in, doesn't it?
But it's extremely high-tech. This is nothing like anything most have heard of. And I spoke to a researcher today that actually got into the system and has had it done. And he has the matter that was taken from his blood and from his system, and that's being tested now. So this is pretty frontline data. We're not speculating, and we'll post an article on that later, but that may be a factor because there is nowhere to hide.
This is a high-tech blood cleansing device. You don't even have to take the blood out, right?
It's a whole procedure. No, you do.
You do.
The blood is removed from the body, literally, and cleansed. And we're finding out more data on it now. I don't want to misspeak on anything, but I spoke to a person who had this done today.
Gosh. How expensive is it, did he say?
I don't know what his ends were for getting even into this. I don't think it's something that's available to everybody, and there's this individual has pretty good connections, but I'm sure it's not cheap.
And you know what? The elitists couldn't care less about how much it costs anyways.
No, not at all. And I spoke to this person today, but it's not a one-day walk-in, walk-out process. It's a two-day ordeal. So anyway, but it's the results seem to be quite profound. And again, this may be a factor. We're not dealing with sanity overall, but this may be a way that they feel that they have exempted themselves from the consequences the rest of us are suffering.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Sheboygan in Wisconsin. Josie's with us. Hi, Josie. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, everything that I didn't get your last name, Whittington?
Correct.
Is it worse than all the billions of tons of pollution that we've been putting in the air for how many years now since the Industrial Revolution?
Yeah.
And more animals have disappeared in the past 300 years than all of the times of a dinosaur. I'm just totally fed up with humanity. We're like, and I don't, of course there are exceptions like yourself and other people that are very, very concerned because they look into, like you say, look into what's really going on. But they're not running this world. And also all the people, you can't even get two people to agree on something. How can you, I totally agree with everything you're saying. I don't know the science behind it because I'm not a scientist, but I just don't see any kind of revolution to change. Nature can practically deal with everything, but it cannot deal with man's greed. I'm just fed up with all of it,
Well, you're right about the greed part, Dane.
I share your angst. Your points are very valid. Let me fire at that real quick. First, yes, this is much more lethal than the pollution that's being produced by the burning of hydrocarbon. Carbon itself would actually be a fuel for the boreal forest. If it was just carbon and they weren't thwarting the Earth's hydrological cycle, the boreal forest in many ways would actually be thriving from the excess carbon in the atmosphere and the increased rainfall. But now they have toxic metal particulates and decreased rainfall, so it's absolutely much worse than the pollution that we've all had to deal with for decades on top of this geoengineering. As far as people never coming together, I agree with that. It's like herding butterflies. But in this regard, this is coming to a head. It's coming to a head fast. And I don't think they can hide these programs much longer. And these programs are very catalyzing. I've lectured from everybody from the Tea Party to the Green Party. No one wants to be a lab rat in a massive experiment with horrific consequences. People are coming together on this issue, and this is the issue that could truly bring a lot of things to light. So it's imperative we carry this torch. All of us can help. And as dark as it seemed, it's darkest before the dawn. And if everybody contributed, if one person told two at the beginning of the month, those two told two the second day of the month, that's 5.5 million at the end of 30 days. Exponentially, it's hard to imagine the math is that, but it is. So we can all help. We all must help. If we could bring this to light, it would change the flavor of what we face.
Did you hear the story about these 6,000 dead pigs found in that Shanghai river?
Dead pigs?
Dead pigs, 6,000 of them.
No.
Most of them diseased. It's just a bizarre story.
I haven't, but look, this is what you have happening. When you wipe the slate clean of the natural microbes, you open the door for complete fungal infection. And of the extinction rate I mentioned earlier, as many as 200 species a day, 10,000 times natural variability, studies suggest that 70 to 80% of that is fungally related. So we're going to see all sorts of things. And as our organisms become weak, fungal infection is going to be an issue for humans as well. In fact, the Mayo Clinic, George, suggests now that perhaps 90% of all sinusitis is fungally related. That while they're doling out antibiotics to everybody, that's not the problem. And so, again, the planet responds when such damage is done. Things are triggered, and they're not pretty. So that could be related to some sort of fungal issue, too. We don't know.
All right, let's go next to, of course, Julio in Chicago on our Skype line. Julio, go ahead.
Good morning, George. I'm a big fan of your work, and Mr. Wigington, big fan of your work as well. I sent you an email, Mr. Wigington. I'm doing a documentary myself on geoengineering, and I'd like to interview you sometime. I'm going to be out in Northern California next week. My question in throughout my research the last couple of months, even last few years, is how many state and local communities throughout the country are openly involved in weather modification. I just read something right now where in Colorado they're getting set to allocate about $175,000 to a weather modification program in the fiscal year of 2013 beginning in July. I'm also finding what blows my mind is if you use the terminology correctly, say cloud seeding or climate engineering, it amazes me how many people open up to you. I had Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island admit to me that Congress has looked into cloud seeding and various geoengineering practices. And finally, are you familiar, Mr. Wigington, with weather derivatives and how groups like the CME Group, Chicago Mercantile Exchange in Chicago, are basically betting on the weather? I had a farmer admit to me last week in Arlington, Virginia, that you can bet on a 12-by-12 radius on the weather.
I am familiar with that, and in fact, we would expect such casinos to be run by those who actually run the weather. So the casino is a rigged game, and yes, those who are making the weather also run the casino, just like they run the weather dissemination and everything else. So yes, I am familiar with the weather derivatives. So whatever the catastrophe, they can make money on this. On the smaller weather modification programs, of which there's 100 to 150 publicized in the U.S. every year, and those programs are, for all practical purposes, negated by the vastly larger geoengineering programs. So whatever these states are doing or some power companies in certain regions to try to seed, it's, for all intents and purposes, meaningless compared to the effect of the global geoengineering programs, which involve nations around the globe, NATO countries, competing countries, Russia, China, and those countries that don't wish to participate are bullied into allowing their airspace to be used. We understood Ireland fought this for a while, and we saw they were economically crushed afterwards. So there are few, if any, standing in the way of these programs, with the exception of countries like Iran.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Annie's with us, Salt Lake City, Utah. Hi, Annie. Thank you.
Hi, guys. This may be, you've already answered my question about is there an antidote, but I have another question that I know will sound a little bit crazy, but could it be possible that perhaps some alien race is bullying the governments here in all the nations to do this? So at one time, this planet may become more adaptable for them.
I've heard things like that before, but all I can base my conclusions are on hard science data, and frankly, whatever might be out there, and I'm not denying that it would be hard to imagine we're alone in the universe, but that being said, I see nothing that I cannot contribute completely to human behavior, and I have been with scientists, right. I've been with legislators, and it's very easy to see how things like this can happen, quite simply because very few of either category has any backbone.
Bad human behavior, by the way.
Bad human behavior.
Let's go next to Justin in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Justin, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having the show on tonight about this. I think it's a really good topic to get out there. And unfortunately, it's a little disappointing to see just anecdotally how resistant people are to the concept of even entertaining it and evaluating it critically. I mean, on Facebook, you'll see somebody post something and show an example of contrails, back in the early 80s or something that looked normal and they dissipate. Pretty readily, and then, showing a sky of today where it's crisscrossed with, really hazy stuff. And I can just say out of experience, I've spent a lot of time outdoors ever since the 80s, and I remember when contrails would just evaporate, and some of them still do today. But the thing is, I spent about 7 years working outdoors, in fact, installing solar, and I had lots of time on the roofs in this last 7 years, and I'll tell you, you can tell the difference between a chemtrail and a contrail.
Oh, yeah.
And granted, there are certain weather factors that can make, chemtrails stick around longer. But the other thing was, back in 99, this was right after I had been a naysayer initially. I heard stuff on Art Bell's show back then. Heard about a guy in Alaska claiming that he had particulates falling out of the sky that looked like spider webs, and that he had actually caught some on his truck and then sent some in for samples, and they were high in beryllium and aluminum, all these things. I thought, well, they tested it. Maybe that was contaminated, whatever. Well, then within just a couple of years of hearing that show in 99, right outside of Sacramento, my friend's car broke down, pulled over to the side of the road. It was a completely hazy day. It almost looked like it was going to rain. You couldn't even see. It was just cloud, like thick cloud. Well, the funny thing is there were no trees around. We're right in the middle of Sacramento Valley. And everywhere you could look up into the sky and all around, there were these spider web looking things falling out of the sky, but they were super long and they were a little thicker than a normal spider web. When they got on the car, they just disintegrated, kind of like goo, pretty much just like the guy had said on the radio a few years before that. So I just want to say to all the people out there who might have questions in their mind, not to mention the pure science behind why you would seed, why you would use particulates of fine matter like this. I mean, just spend some time outside and look around.
If I can make two
listen
points
to people and don't just be critical. I mean, this stuff is significant.
Sure is.
One
go
question
ahead.
Thank you for the call in. And if I can make two points. One, even if you see a trail that appears to dissipate, if it's of any significant length and fairly brightly colored, even if it dissipates, very often that is also a particulate disbursement. And those trails will, after a certain length of time, the atmosphere will start to get silvery white. You'll see wispy, cobwebby-looking clouds. Quite simply, again, according to NOAA's original data, 70% humidity, 70 below zero. So very unusual conditions, and that would be even the shortest-lived, almost transparent trail. So any significant trail, chances are, especially with the warming of the atmosphere that we've had, is likely a particulate trail. And again, one can't say conclusively from one case to another. Certainly the longer ones obviously are, but even many of the shorter ones that are maybe a minute or two in length that seem to dissipate, watch the sky even on those days. And we see it in our area often, and the sky will gradually become more and more hazy, silvery, or wispy, cobwebby clouds. This is also particulate disbursement. We believe there's several methods of disbursement.
And Justin, I think you had a question, so let's get
it's
that.
It's not just the length. I mean, it's also the width. They grow in width. I mean, like I said, I spent from morning until night outdoors working for 7 years in all different, you know, parts of the season. You can see it. I mean, plus the other thing is the air travel corridors, those are consistent. What you'll see with these chemtrails that they're spraying is it's zigzag or it's crisscross patterns that are totally not in line with the normal flight corridors.
And many more aircraft
and air travel. Yeah. And the thing I was going to ask is this, what if it's not just about weather modification? What if they're actually preparing for a large event from the sun and they think that they're trying to do something good by maybe having a ton of carbon in the atmosphere, like an insulator, and then this super, you know, a lot of conductive materials high up where the impact from a coronal mass ejection might happen.
CME.
I don't want to, like, say, hey, this is a great thing that's happening, but sometimes, you know, the benefit of the doubt there might just be that, well, holy shit. I mean, excuse me, holy smokes, what if they're trying to protect us?
Let me elaborate on that. Okay, in relation to a CME, a coronal mass ejection, or a solar flare, now, I believe this is a school of thought for some that are involved with geoengineering. But this is the paradox. As they shred our natural protection, they're ripping the ozone layer apart by spraying, so they have to spray more to compensate for the lack of natural protection that we now no longer have. And that truly paints us into a corner. The more they spray, the more they feel they have to spray. Because if we don't have natural protection, such as the ozone layer, and there is a substantial CME, that could shut down grid power to nuclear facilities. If we have large enough grid power losses, we might have Fukushima times 100 or 200.
That's all we need, right?
Exactly. So clearly this may be a part of their equation. The caller is very insightful to have connected that dot. But it's quite ironic to shred your natural protection in exchange for a completely toxic planet-killing protection. And once again, the geoengineering simply is a giant leap off the cliff. So although that scenario is valid, I believe it is the cure, the pharmaceutical cure for planet Earth. It's exponentially worse than the disease, and we know that's how scientists think. We see it every day on the TV when these pharmaceuticals are advertised, and that's exactly what they're doing to planet Earth, the pharmaceutical cure that will kill the planet to heal it.
I am convinced, Dane, that it's also, as we talked earlier, contributing to massive respiratory problems with people. It's not just normal allergies.
There is absolutely, positively, no question to that. And I would stand ground on that till hell freezes. We know these particulates are there. That's not a debate. We know it's raining down on us, and we know we're breathing it. It can't not be the major factor. It is the major factor, mathematically speaking, and I'm sure plenty of experts will deny that, but that's simply because they are not connected with reality or paid to deny it.
Well, that's true. And Dane's website, by the way, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, geoengineeringwatch.org. Incredible story as we talk about geoengineering threats, just what they probably will be doing to us and are doing to us in the atmosphere, spraying us as well. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take some final phone calls for you, so don't touch your dial. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, we're going to talk about drones and why is Homeland Security buying billions of rounds of ammunition. So make sure you're part of that show. Hey, by the way, Saturday, if you live in the greater New Jersey, New York area, come on by. I'm speaking at the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo. Information at our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. It's my first major event on the East Coast. Come on by if you live out that way. They've got 250 tickets available for you, and come see me at my event. That'll be Saturday this week. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dane Wigington with us, and of course, your final phone calls here. I don't know, Dane. I don't know what can people do to stop this. Let's assume it is happening. It's lethal. What can we do?
Well, it's happening, all right, and it is lethal, and this is what people can do. Again, the legislative system, political system is completely bought and sold. And I believe the only way in and to bring these programs to a halt is to raise public awareness to the point where those involved in carrying out these programs realize what they're a part of, realize they're poisoning their own children along with the rest of us.
So, and at that point, we would hope that enough of them would refuse to participate. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, George, I've already had an indication from a scientist at a major university that is involved with these programs indicate that that is happening. So, and I know enough military people to know that the people, at least that I'm acquainted with, would not participate in such programs if they had any idea that's what they were doing. So if we simply could raise awareness to the point where this was out in the open, and I think events happening on the ground, the decimation this is causing, can't be hidden much longer. So even though people seem to roll their eyes and walk away, they're not going to have that option much longer, because these guys are ripping the climate apart, quite literally, and that will be very visible in the coming months, ever more so. So if we can help raise awareness to the point where those carrying out these programs understand that they're sinking the ship on which they and their children depend, I believe we could stop these systems or these programs from the inside out. And that indeed is the only way that I see forward. So if we simply could get this out into the light of day, I think the rest of the pieces would fall into place.
Any politicians, maybe a Ron Paul type, but anybody else screaming about this?
Not that's actively in office. Karen Johnson, a former senator from Arizona, I have regular contact with, and she's dealing with other people, other legislators now. And I think the word is definitely getting around, and many of these people are realizing that, in the case of Karen Johnson, she's always been outspoken on this. She's a great, great lady. But I think others that are currently in office are realizing that they are cannon fodder as well, that they are not on the inside, and they are also expendable. So these programs are torpedoing the ship on which they depend again. So I think word is spreading faster than we know, but it's up to all of us to carry this torch. And if we all work together, we'd have this out into the light of day sooner than we know. And that's imperative. If this isn't dealt with, then I believe all of the other points are moot.
I agree. Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach in Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hey, Michael, good morning.
Great show, absolutely the most important show in Coast to Coast history. God bless you both, gentlemen. You've done a wonderful job. But I want to answer your question, what can you do? There is something you can do that you will never hear from a Washington politician. This federal republic that is doing this to us was created by 13 states. Those states own this federal government. The 50 states own it. They decide whether it continues, whether it changes, or whether it ceases to exist. And that's what a constitutional convention is all about. That's what's created it, and that's the only thing that's going to correct it. So
well,
you have to talk to your local politicians who are running for your state legislature, and you're going to have to tell them that unless they support a constitutional convention at the state level, you will not support them in any way from now on. Going to correct this.
Do the state people even know what's going on, Dane?
I believe they do. And again, at the California Energy Commission, for example, I felt that the scientists that were there knew. Certainly they knew after we filled their desks with data. But I would say, well, there's one other aspect to this, that even those that felt or that have known about these programs at the highest levels, and whatever their agendas, whether eugenics is a part of that or simply a complete grab for global power, as Scott Stevens has said, that if you control the weather, you control the planet, and certainly that's true. But I believe that we are seeing now perhaps a panic in the power structure, that they did not plan on triggering the climate feedback loops that they have now triggered. And I believe now there is a panic in the power structure, and that even those who were orchestrating these programs now are realizing that they cannot control the beast they have let out of the cage, and they are now frantically trying to refreeze the Arctic with ice nucleation, and we see this by satellite data imagery. I mean, it's virtually covered. The sun almost never shines in the Arctic, and we see the aerosols being dispersed on satellite imagery. And I believe they're frantically trying to put this genie back in the bottle, but it's simply not going to go. So, again, this lump is it can't fit under the rug much longer, and I believe truly that this is something the power structure, whatever their agenda with these programs, did not bargain on.
Let's go to Josh in Spokane, Washington. First-time caller for you. Hi, Josh.
Hello, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for doing the show tonight. I'm not a tree hugger, but I walked through the park, and I noticed last summer about a 20-foot section of the tree bark fell off of a tree just overnight.
Jeez.
And this past spring, I noticed the cobwebs on the grass. So that's new to me for the cobweb part. And with that, my theory about all this was, I thought it was pertaining to the government trying to speed up the global warming in order to do mining for the precious minerals, gold and silver, in the Arctic.
If I could elaborate on that, there is some documentation where that was suggested by the U.S. and Russian governments going back several decades. But although that was discussed, what we see on satellite data imagery, what we see on the really unprecedented refreeze, once the freeze season or the melt season is reached in the Arctic, the refreeze is absolutely unprecedented, and we believe only can be accomplished with a full-scale geoengineering deployment with ice nucleation and a complete covering of the top of the globe. So it appears by all available data that they are frantically trying to refreeze the Arctic and keep that cap from melting, and thus trying to keep the methane in the seafloor. If that methane releases in its entirety, that reservoir in the East Siberian Shelf, it's game over for planet Earth. All the data indicates that. So I absolutely believe they're trying to put back what they let go. And I believe the only way that that can successfully happen, though, is certainly not through this pharmaceutical cure of countless jets and toxic particulates being dumped, but rather to cease with these programs and allow the planet to respond, and that is our best chance. Certainly, this giant wrench in the works can only hurt our chances, period.
Michelle is in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. Go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just a couple of questions here. How can an individual measure the content of aluminum, let's say, in their food, like vegetables, lentils, milk? And are populated areas sprayed more? Like, is there a way to try and, you know, reduce your exposure? And how can individuals really do anything? Like, I'm in Canada, so I don't know a lot about it. And what are the symptoms of toxicity by aluminum? And don't the Environmental Protection Act recognize this as a serious issue? And shouldn't there be some legal power that individuals have to sort of, you know, put a stop to it?
I don't think any legal precedent is going to get us anywhere on this. It's only going to be when the natives, the entire population, is foaming at the mouth, grabbing their pitchforks and shovels and looking for whoever's responsible. As far as testing food sources, I'm not sure which labs do that. Testing your rain is very simple. If you do test rain, you need to put a container out before the first drops fall. Generally, the front end of the storm is the most laden with metal. If you have a clean glass container and you're careful not to contaminate that, a lab can test that for about $20. As far as $20 per metal, I should say, that you wish to test for, it's not expensive. As far as spraying over populated areas, we do see that in certain regions, and again, there could be a number of reasons for that. One appears to be perhaps to lower the temperature readings in those regions on given days, possibly to further hide the damage that they've already done from these programs. Other reasons could be more nefarious, and again, we can only speculate on that.
You know what? We have a lot of peaches in the Niagara region, and I noticed, I moved here 2 years ago, and I noticed after a rainfall, a white powder all over the plants. I've never seen this before. And it was really a thick coating of this white, dusty stuff over the plants. And I was wondering, could that be the residue from a chemtrail? And, you know, are plants that are food more concentrated than meat, or are meats more concentrated? Is there a way of trying to avoid your level of toxicity in different foods?
Okay, let me answer both those questions. First, the residue you saw is in all likelihood, yes.
remnant of geoengineering particulates, and it can be a number of elements, and depending on the type of storm, you know, it'd be hard to identify what that might be without an actual test. As far as what you eat and what may have less contamination, the larger the organism that produces the food you eat, the more the contaminant is filtered out. So if you eat a fruit from a large tree, the bioavailable aluminum is going to be much more filtered out than eating a plant that grows right in the ground, a carrot or some lettuce. Or if you eat, for example, again, back to an acorn or something like that, again, large organism, much more filtered. So that's one way of having a less contaminated food source, by simply eating varieties that are from much larger organisms like trees.
All right, great. Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate your question. Time for a few more here. We'll go to Lillian in Shasta Lake, California. Hi, Lillian, go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call on behalf of myself and my
best friend
in the world. I woke her up tonight to listen to your first hour and a half. She was floored as well as I was. Of all the doctors in the world, you named what's wrong with us over in early 1990s. We both paralleled each other and became very ill within 4 to 5 months of each other, and we couldn't figure out what was wrong.
Symptoms? What were they? Breathing problems?
Breathing problems. We just drop to the ground, become weak, pale.
Oh, geez.
I would literally couldn't breathe. They would rush me in and EpiPen me until I would breathe, and Benadryl me for hours on end. She had breathing problems, but not to that extent. But she ended up being diagnosed with lupus, and now she doesn't have lupus. They don't know what's wrong with her. She's 85. I'm 56. This began, this really hit us hard, like I said, in 1990. I want to know how much longer we have to live.
Well, now, we don't have studies that go that far, do we, Dane?
As far as what was in the air, there's not any testing data such as we have now going back that far, but we do have very credible data to indicate these programs were absolutely going on then and going on again back much, much further still. So those that are more susceptible succumb earlier. But I would say this, that at the level of spraying we're seeing right now, and it appears to be being ramped up yet again right now, that if this continues, that all of us will be in the same boat soon. Organisms can only take so much of this constant exposure before they succumb, and the strongest of us will succumb at some point. If the spraying continues, it simply must stop if we were to have any chance.
You don't see any reason why it would discontinue, do you?
Well, again, I do if people refuse to participate. It must be brought to that level. I mean, I truly believe the vast majority of people participating in these programs have absolutely no idea what they're participating in. They're being told it's some benevolent task for the common good. And it's although, again, geoengineering, the data makes clear, they absolutely can cool down huge regions for a certain time, but it comes at the cost of a worsened warming. Even NASA's own data, George, states that even though they call it a persistent contrail, we know it to be a particulate trail, and we know it's referring to geoengineering, but their own data states that these aircraft trails are, in fact, worsening global warming. So clearly, this is cutting off, again, one's nose despite one's face. So they are not helping the situation at all, even though they can cool regions temporarily. We see this. We see little cold events here and there that are being ice nucleated, jet stream diverted, and they'll create a record snow here or there at very warm temperatures compared to historical norms. But this is making the overall situation far, far worse. The planet must be allowed to respond, period.
Yep, let's go to Temple, Texas. Renee's with us. Hey, Renee, don't walk away. I always want to.
Oh, hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Hi. I'm a biomedical research scientist. A number of years ago, I worked in an Air Force lab studying the behavioral and biological effects of non-lethal weapons. First of all, I do believe a lot of scientists do know what's going on, and they're willfully participating in it. But I have a question. I encounter on a daily basis behavior that is bizarre, weird, aggressive, and even stupid. And I want to know if this phenomenon of geoengineering is affecting people's ability to think rationally.
I would say that it has to be a factor. Again, it's hard to quantify that scenario, but from what we know of the HARP, the ELF frequencies, the extra low frequencies from HARP, you couple that with a more conductive body, that is certainly the case with all of us now that we've absorbed enough of these particulates, and the neurological effects that are well known, again, documented by internationally recognized people like Dr. Russell Blaylock. I mean, these dots all connect, and it certainly has to be a factor. It can't not be a factor. So although it's impossible to say in any given case what is occurring, you could take the guy who smoked for 50 years and died of lung cancer. You can't say conclusively that's what did it, but you can be pretty darn sure.
Well, you could be pretty darn sure. But yeah. This is a situation, of course, as you have said, Dane, so wisely, needs to be stopped. The big question is, can we stop it? I don't think I've seen one reporter in a presidential news conference ask the president about something like this. Have you?
No, but again, there's the factor here that needs to be considered. This lump won't fit under the rug much longer. The damage they have done is manifesting itself in ways that simply can't be hidden. So in that regard, I believe that the recognition of this will come to light soon enough, and it will come faster if we all pull this load, if we all educate ourselves to the degree we can, get a flyer, a credible flyer. We have some posted on geoengineeringwatch.org. Design your own, pass data out like that. That's much more effective than pointing at the sky and ranting. It's up to all of us.
That's the only way it's going to happen. Thank you so much, Dane. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.